Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And good luck with your research. Okay, for our last talk today, we're going to switch gears. Texas is actually one of the leaders in the country on use of compost for stormwater control, and so we're going back for presentations. So Barry Stank is a landscape architect who came from Austin.
Thanks, Sally.
This
is very intimidating to be here with a bunch of soil scientists. I'm just a lowly landscape architect, but I appreciate Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share with you some of the information that I have to tell you about what we've been doing in Texas over the past 10 or 12 years since we've been using compost. And it's something, as a landscape architect, that's very exciting for me. When I was hired years ago, it was to plant crepe myrtles in the medians and get our highways full of trees, and we've done plenty of that. But one thing that I learned when I came on to TxDOT was that our engineers are all consumed with building these structures that are carrying lots of traffic, and one thing that they're not very concerned about is the other part of the right-of-way, which is everything between the road surface that we drive on and our neighbor's fence. But that's a very integral... Oops, I went all the way to the end. Let's see. This area between the fence or the frontage road here and the edge of the highway is very important to our engineered facility because it's draining our highway quickly. That area is meant to accept the water and move it quickly as possible off of the road surface for safety purposes, of course. So again, it's kind of secondary to our engineers, but the way that we build it, this is just a great photo, even though it's an old photo, not the best photo, but it shows what we're doing out here. So we are ordering up this white soil here. We call it caliche in central Texas. It's a very calcareous soil, and we roll it and we roll it till it gets really hard, because that's really what you build highways on. It makes perfect driving conditions. But for the sides of the road, what we do after we put that subsoil on is we go find what we call topsoil somewhere, and we blade it out. And that's what you're seeing here. And when I was hired in the early days to go out in the field and solve some of these erosion problems, I said, well, you know, I'm a landscape architect. I don't really have a background in soil, but I know topsoil means off the top, right? And in east of Austin, where I live, that could be 6 or 7 or 8 inches deep. West of Austin, that could be a quarter of an inch, if that. So where are we getting this topsoil? Many times I would be asked to inspect these topsoil pits, if you will, and that gives you your first direction as to what our problem might be. I'd be carried off to the edge of town with a contractor, and he said, well, that down there, that's where I'm getting my topsoil. And I was like, well, again, you know, I'm not a soil scientist, but 100 feet deep, that's not going to have any of the good stuff in it, right? At that time, that's all I knew, it was the good stuff. But, of course, as I learned a little bit more about soil, I learned that soil was, you know, it had no organic matter in it at all. And that's probably one of the problems why we were not getting our grass to grow. But typically, again, this is how we try and vegetate the right-of-way. Again, erosion is a big problem for us, and growing grass quickly is the key. It seems so simple, but it's really not. Living through one of the worst heat waves that we've had in decades, where we had several weeks over 110 degrees, I don't care how much water you put out there, it's pretty tough to grow grass. And this is typically how we do it. On a slope, we would hydromulch or hydro seed with fertilizer and seed, and then we would unroll these very expensive wood fiber blankets out, which are a great tool, don't get me wrong. As this water truck goes by, it's irrigating the blankets, they stay nice and moist. The theory is that when that seed does begin to emerge, it's creating quite a tight matrix there that's going to hopefully avoid erosion. But if you're putting that water out on a summer like we've had, half of it's evaporating before it even gets down to that blanket or down to that seed bed. It's just a very tough environment to grow grass. And there could be several reasons besides poor quality topsoil. It could be, were we using the right seed mix? We have such a varying degree of soil and climate temperatures in TxDOT, or in Texas. We've got 25 different seed mixes for all of the regions of the state. It could be a timing issue. Our optimum timing is March, April, and May in Texas. Well, what happens if your big highway job is finished in July when it's too hot to plant grass? So there are a lot of features that go into making the perfect way to grow grass. But often what we are faced with are erosion problems such as this. Again, hard to tell what might have happened here. It could be just excessive rainfall. Hard to believe since we haven't had that happen this year, but it does happen. And you can see here that not only is it a safety issue, it's going to threaten, if it's allowed to continue, it's going to threaten the integrity of this headwall here. And then it's not just pushing up the soil and regrading that and reseeding it. We're going to have to do some structural work here in that riprap slope. So it can be very expensive. Aesthetically, it's very ugly. We get into big trouble with the EPA, as you can imagine, when all of this soil washes away and ends up in somebody else's property. So fixing it right the first time is the key to getting this done. But again, it seems to be a big mystery. We, are lacking in locations to find good organic topsoil. So that just is a big problem. So about 12 years ago, as a landscape architect, I was invited to a compost workshop that was being put on by our state's DEQ, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. And while I was at this workshop, I thought, compost, I'm a landscape architect. I already know compost is a great thing. Didn't really understand why. But at this workshop, I heard several speakers from local municipalities that were talking about how to make compost and why it was so good and what a shame it was that we were putting organic matter into the landfill. What a waste that was. And I literally started, another picture of erosion, I literally started scratching my head. I thought, you know, all of my soil friends keep telling me that TxDOT's problem in growing grass is because there's a lack of organic matter in our soil, yet I keep hearing all these speakers saying what a waste it is that we're putting this organic matter in the landfill. You know, why can't we come together and figure out how to use that to attack our problem? So at that conference, I met somebody who is to become one of my best friends and colleagues for life, Scott McCoy. He and I put our heads together, and he said, well, you know, compost could really help you out, but you're talking about needing a large volume of it. And I said, yes, and you wouldn't believe those engineers I work with. Boy, they're hard to convince. You know, they just want to throw the seed out, pour the water on it, and then pray and hope that grass comes up. You know, so we talked to a lot of our progressive engineers. We talked to a lot of our highway contractors. We thought they were going to be a real roadblock. But you know what they told me? They said, we're willing to try anything. This problem is so expensive for us. We have to come back. We have to reseed. We have to refertilize. We have to unroll more blankets. You know, we just keep doing it, and they keep paying us for it. But sooner or later, we need to wrap up the job and leave. So they really weren't a problem to us. We thought, well, what about quality control? How do we judge different sorts of compost? How do we measure them up against each other? We talked to several states. At that time, there was maybe one or two with a specification. So our engineers said we're very specification-oriented. We've got to be able to measure this, so you must write a spec. And at that time in my career, I thought, well, gosh, how hard could that be? Well, it took up about the next year and a half of my life. Then what we decided we need to do, okay, we've got this spec in our hand. We decided we've got to take it out to our engineers in the field and show them. They don't know us. They don't know about what we're talking, but let's show them. So here's my colleague on the right, Scott McCoy, from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. We literally went out into the field. And in the first days of us doing these, we would just kind of say a few words about what compost was. And then we'd stand back, and we would have arranged with a local composter to donate material and a local applicator to put it out there. My buddy at the DEQ had some grant money that he used to purchase it, and then I got all the warm bodies out there to watch. And let me tell you, that was the key. fixing an erosion problem in their own backyard that they could watch week after week, month after month. That really turned them on, and they started using it. We even got, at that time, the largest EPA grant, and we were able to work with Texas A&M University to develop a kind of a branding program. We did brochures, we did notepads, we did pens and pencils. Every time there was a trade show, we were there, but we put this logo on everything we produced. We also worked really hard to network with our highway building contractors. It wasn't enough that TxDOT spec'd the material. We had to make those contractors feel comfortable with using it. You're going to put what on the side of the road and it's going to smell like what? We had to say, no, you're thinking of something else. We had to explain to them at least the basics of compost so that they could get over their apprehension in using that material. And we also had to teach them how to bid on TxDOT products. We were talking to local vendors that did not know how to get into the bidding system. And we said, you know, we can spec it, but you've got to go working and networking with the contractors so you can make them feel comfortable that there is a supply nearby. As I said, we went to all kinds of trade shows in those days just to make people feel more comfortable, not only about specifying the material, but about applying it as well. We were shameless. Anytime we had a letter from somebody supporting compost, we'd just make lots of copies. Where was a scanner at that time? We didn't have those. But anyway, we'd send them out to everybody we knew because we found out that at TxDOT's hierarchy, we have 25 different kingdoms out there. And if we had one that found great success with it, we'd go next door and say, oh, your buddy used it over there. It's really great stuff, you know. That way nobody had to be the first to try it. But it was really very helpful. We also wrote lots of articles for industry and trade magazines, and that was very helpful in spreading the word about the specification. So when Scott and I would go out and do workshops for our engineers and contractors, we tried to keep it on a really basic level. You know, these guys, again, don't need to know the ins and outs. They just need to understand the basics enough so they could explain it to somebody else if anybody from the press or whatever had questions. So we wanted to tell them that, number one, it's going to change the topsoil on their project and make it more apt to grow grass quicker, more quickly. So if you establish the vegetation, you're just avoiding the costs that are associated with erosion. And of course, number four there, most importantly, it fulfills our stormwater abatement obligations and keeps us out of trouble with the EPA. So again, just talking very simply about why compost was so good, obviously it's returning organic matter to the soil, and it holds on to that precious moisture for us in Texas that's so, so valuable. It does act as a sponge, and it gives that soil just a little bit more time to help that seed germinate. And number three, it does actually change the structure of the soil, and I have an interesting slide to show you. Here's some very clay soils on the left side of the screen, and that soil to the right is the same soil, but it has been amended with compost, so you truly see how that structure has been changed. It's opening up that clay soil, and it's going to let the water drain through a little bit more quickly. And then on the other side of that, in the eastern part of our state, we have very sandy soils. So compost, again, acts as a sponge and holds on to that water just a little bit longer. When we wrote our specification in Texas, we tried to be very cognizant of all of the types of compost that might be made in our state. At that time, we were working very closely with the feedlots around the DFW area. For our state, that's where most of the milk in Texas comes from. And as some of the speakers have alluded to, the field-applied manure, that was a big problem up there because it sits on a very important watershed for us. So composting that manure and taking it out of the watershed was very attractive to that area up there. It was attractive to the EPA, and it made a good product for us. But certainly dairy manure compost is one of our largest kinds of compost in Texas. But we also have a very large feedlot industry in the panhandle around Lubbock and Amarillo. the smell of money is what they call it up there. I call it a different kind of smell, but anyway, that is one of the biggest industries for the Panhandle region. And then obviously we have biosolids compost being made municipally in Houston. I was telling Sally earlier, San Antonio makes a beautiful biosolids compost. And then in Austin, the longest running municipally made compost in the state, and we call it Dillo Dirt. Pretty cute, huh? But it's a great selling product, and it they do literally sell it faster than they can make it. So our spec is very inclusive of any of the kinds of feedstocks that might be generated in our state. Of course, if you're familiar with compost, you understand this. My reason for including this slide in my program is that I wanted to remind you that, again, when we were training these engineers, we had to tell them, yes, in one way, this is the same compost that your grandmother made in the back of her garden, but then in another way, it's not. So we wanted to show them slides of composting facilities so that they could really get into their mind, wow, this is a large-scale operation that's being very carefully controlled. That was very important to us. We wanted to let them know how the material was going to be worked and winrowed and air and water incorporated into it to help it heat up, how it was going to be screened to any size that we wanted. This is a picture I took out of state at a compost facility that was composting something that, at least to me, didn't look very good. I wanted to remind our engineers that our product, if it met our spec, was going to be something clean, something they could feel comfortable with talking to an adjacent landowner and explaining very basically. But this is a slide of something that we would use, and I wanted to remind them that it is a pathogen-free product. I was afraid that if our inspectors could not explain the very basic system of compost to a layperson, that we might have problems with the press. And we have had from time to time, but I'm real proud to say that most of those questions were quickly addressed, and haven't heard of any problems in years, quite frankly. We were very fortunate early on to get a great deal of support from the US EPA, and the US Composting Council worked so closely with us, couldn't have been more supportive. And in fact, our spec recognizes the seal of testing assurance that's put forth by the US Composting Council. Only composts that have been tested by the seal of testing assurance program are acceptable for use on our projects. And I think in Texas today we have 32 vendors that are seal of testing assurance certified. In Texas, our TxDOT spec has three general ways of specifying compost: compost manufactured topsoil, erosion control compost, and general use compost. And I'll go over these real briefly. Compost manufactured topsoil is a blend of whatever soil we have there and compost. In many situations, the soil that we might have on site existing is pretty good, and in those instances, we would peel that back and save it in a stockpile while the facility was being built. Then we'd blade it back out to a depth of 3 inches. We would put one inch of compost over the top, and then we would disc that in. The other situation is if we've just got, you know, pretty fair soil on the site, we blade out an inch of compost and then we go over it with a disc to incorporate it to get that compost manufactured topsoil. If we've got any kind of a slope to our situation that would be a bit more erodible, we're going to want a blend of erosion control compost, which is half compost and half wood chips. And here is a good-looking pile of erosion control compost. And that can be applied different ways. It can be applied pneumatically. A good blade man can put down a pretty even depth of that, even on a fairly steep slope. And here's a good slide showing a demo that we did with just the regular seeding mix on either side, but an erosion control compost blend in the middle there. And you can see the results pretty well speak for themselves. Then there's that final way of specking compost, which is what we call general use compost. That's 100% compost. That is the compost that I, as a landscape architect, might specify in the backfill for my landscaped areas. It's also something that we use on our established turf areas for our roadside parks, our safety rest areas and such. Again, it's a top dressing application that will keep you from watering too much in the summer or needing any kind of a synthetic fertilizer. And then lastly, we have a specification for biodegradable erosion control logs, which we use to control stormwater, and here is just one example of that. So we've used it in a variety of ways. This slide kind of gives you an idea in Texas what kinds of compost we're using. And again, biosolids and yard trimmings compost is our largest one at this time. This is a pretty impressive slide. Since I've been keeping numbers in 03, we're over 3 million cubic yards that we've used in TxDOT to date. As in 11, that number is down only because we can't get enough money from the federal government to build more highways. No, that number I think has steadied off. Our lettings annually are down, so that's why that number is down. But it's a pretty impressive amount, and it's doing great things for some of our municipalities around the area that couldn't figure out a way on how to get rid of their biosolids. This is a list of some of the research that we've done through the years. We've worked very closely with the University of Texas, Texas A&M University, to do several different kinds of research on compost and its effect on controlling erosion and stormwater runoff. So to summarize, compost has just been a great thing for us. Number one, it's solving high priority environmental challenges. Again, what to do with that organic matter, whether it's municipally generated or generated by the dairy industry or the poultry industry, whatever that feedstock might be. Number two there, we believe it does provide a self-sustaining market solution for these materials. And lastly, it's been a great opportunity for us as the big bad highway builders to say, we need your material. We're willing to take your product that you're calling a waste and pay you $30 a yard because it's saving us a lot of money in the long run. So that's been a great PR tool for us. And that's the end of my presentation. Does anybody have any questions? You are just a great group to be here so late in the afternoon. I appreciate it. Yes, sir.
Matt, it seems that you have been using compost for over 10 years.
Right.
So are you guys just using it in Texas? Have you ever tried to work this compost thing with any other state in the U.S.?
We have, and many states have come a long way now. We're certainly not the only one. Myself, I have been to Louisiana. I've given talks in Tennessee and New Mexico. I've even been to Mexico once and had to speak through a translator. That was fun. But many, many states, I don't know if you heard Britt's talk before, but many, many state DOTs have written specifications since ours. I know 2 years ago, Nora Goldstein at BioCycle called us the biggest market in the world. I don't know if that's still true. But just because of our network, we have over 800,000 acres of highway right-of-way in Texas, so just the volume of our system is quite large. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your attention.
Thank you.